Welcome to today's episode of the Press Box Podcast, presented by Bonus Room Art. As we always say, keep in mind if you have not visited their website, bonusroomart.com, we encourage you to do that today. A lot of big things happening there. Some great artwork available for purchase there, as well as some custom artwork commissions you guys can inquire about. Great stuff there. Also, Instagram, Bonus Room Art. Check that out as well. In today's episode, we have a special guest. Current Maryville High School football head coach Derek Hunt will join us. To talk about their program there, his background as an athlete and coach, and what Maryville fans can look forward to in the coming years with him. So we appreciate him joining us. We'll get into that in just a second. First, we also want to remind you about our Twitter account at PressBoxPod. Be sure to, if you're on Twitter, get on there and follow us. We love to interact with some of the listeners, whether it's poll questions or just comments, this and that. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, and we'll be trying to put out some more stuff on that medium as well. And without further ado, let's get into Derek Hunt. In our intro, we are joined now by Maryville High School football head coach Derek Hunt. Derek, we really appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think we were talking a little bit off air. You guys, you and your staff in Maryville just got back from a trip down to Furman to meet with Coach Quarles, who's a friend of the Press Box Podcast also. So start by telling us a little bit about that trip and what you guys did down there.
Yeah, so it was a great trip, and I had connected with Coach Quarles, back when, I guess when he got promoted to the offensive coordinator. Okay. And reached out, figured out when they were doing spring practice. Obviously, we're going to come down and learn as much as we can from them. And so that's what we did, and got to watch them practice and sit in on some of their meetings. Our whole staff went down there, so that was pretty cool, to kind of go down on Friday morning and watch them all Friday, kind of see, how it works and how they do things. And they run a little bit of everything on offense, which, mm-hmm. It's a lot to learn, that's one of the things that I keep, every time I talk to Coach Quarles, he always brings up how much he's learned in the past year, since he's gone to Furman. And it's true. They do so much stuff. I mean, it's just, it's times 10 the high school game,
right,
as far as the amount of verbiage and the amount. I mean, they have a tag for every way they block something. And, it's stuff that a lot of the stuff we do in the high school game, we just don't have words for it.
Right.
But it was a great trip. I learned so much. And Coach Quarles he was awesome.
Yeah, he was telling us that when we had him on the podcast a few weeks ago, he was telling us the exact same thing, how the verbiage was so magnified compared to what it was in high school, and
yep,
and how, the game is so different. And the thing that amazes me is, not to throw any kind of, shade on Furman, but that's not even, FBS, if you take it to the Georgia or Alabama level and then obviously go to the NFL, it's just unbelievable how strategic and how complicated the game gets.
That's right. It's a different language. I mean, it truly is a different language. And, it's amazing what those guys can get accomplished. And what's funny is we're sitting there yesterday morning, we're sitting there with our defensive coordinator and kind of going over their basic philosophy and talking through stuff. And he's like, it really is simple for us. And we're looking up on the board and there's like 1,000 terms up there. And so, but if you're in it a lot and if you're seeing it every day, it's like being in a foreign country. When you go to Costa Rica and live for a year, you're going to learn how to speak Spanish. You're going to learn it that way a whole lot faster than you would looking in a playbook. But he's around it every day and immersed in it, and those kids are immersed in it, so they can learn it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So for you guys at Maryville, and you mentioned spring practice, are you guys doing that now in the winter, or is that more of a spring for you?
So we're going to start March 19th.
Okay.
And, we used to – when I was playing at Maryville, we would go late January
right.
and into February.
Right.
Right.
But now, you know, we'll miss our baseball kids no matter what. Right. And fortunately for us, our secondary coach, co-defense coordinator and secondary coach, Nick White, is also our track coach. And so if we go, you know, and a lot of teams started going late April and into May, and that's what we had done a couple years ago. But, you know, Coach White's willing to share those track kids with us if we'll go earlier, you know, in March. And so we're going to go right when we get back from spring break. And obviously we'll have 15 days to get 10 practices in, and then we'll finish with a scrimmage. We're going to scrimmage Bearden this year.
That'd be good. That'd be good. Yeah. Well, let's before we get too deep into you know, what you're doing now, first, I want to congratulate you. I understand that you and your wife have had your second child, and I want to congratulate you. I'm sure you're not getting a whole lot of sleep right now, are you?
Not much sleep at all, but as you know, but it's been awesome. And you know, we're just so lucky, and we're enjoying every day right now.
Well, it's a blessing. I mean, anytime you have a baby, boy or girl, born that's healthy, it's a blessing from God. So I congratulate you, and I know you feel the same way.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's go back to, you know, obviously I'm a little bit biased. You know, I've known you since you were 8 years old and coaching the Little Rebs, and so I've got kind of a little different thing. But I want you to kind of go back and take me back to when you were growing up, and let's talk a little bit about, you know, how did you get involved in sports? I mean, was it your dad that got you involved in it? What was your first time you said, hey, you know, I kind of really like this football thing, and I think this is something I want to do?
Yeah, so sports, you know, it was always on TV when I was growing up, you know, as a little kid. And I remember when we moved back from North Carolina, of course, my whole family's from Blount County, and
right.
And my dad's job got moved to North Carolina, and that's where I was born. We moved back when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And
right.
And I remember my dad, you know, had called around to try to find out, if, you know, where he could sign me up to play football when I was 7 years old. And there was no teams in Blount County, no 7 and 8 year old teams. And
that's right.
The closest league was in Knoxville. And so, and the closest team to me was in South Knoxville. So I played for the South Dual Cherokee 7 and 8 year old team.
Right.
And we might've had 14 kids on our team. I mean, it was incredible. And we were the second worst team in the league. And the only two wins we had was the same team. We beat the same team twice, and they didn't win a game all year. And so that was kind of my introduction to football. And I'll never forget the Jamboree. We go to the Jamboree. It's my first football game ever. And I was playing running back that game. And the quarterback on the team was the best player on the team by far. Well, they first play of the game, they pitch it to me. And as you can imagine, in 7 and 8 year old league, especially at this time, you know, nobody really even knew what they were doing. And I've ran for a touchdown, but I didn't know they shortened the field for 7 and 8 year olds. And so I didn't know where the end zone was. I didn't know where it stopped. So I just kept running, you know, and I ran all the way through the back of the end zone, and they had to run me down, you know, cause, and that was the only touchdown I scored all year. So I made it count. That's for sure.
So you were like Bo Jackson on that Monday night game in the '80s that ran completely out of the Seattle end zone and into the tunnel, right?
Just kept on going.
So then,
it was awesome.
Okay. So that was, you said that was your 7 year old year. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So, and from what I remember, and obviously we grew up together and played football together, but my first year playing was 8 year old with the Little Rebs. So kind of just, I guess, talk about how that got started. And I know your dad's been the coach there for a long time now, but was that born out of the, you know, having to go to Knoxville and play football up there when you were younger?
No question about it. It was born out of the necessity of, you know, a football team for 7 and 8s in Maryville. You know, we already had, you know, in Blount County, it started with, you know, the Peewees, like the Southerners and the, you know, and the Cubs and,
right.
You know, all the, you know, the 9 and 10 year old league, you know. And so my dad got together with Dan Holloway,
yep,
who
right.
was, you know, a friend of his, and Dane, of course, his son, our age. And you know, so they got a team started. Now, there wasn't a league then. So when we were 8, if you'll remember, we played all of our games in that Knoxville league.
Yeah.
But we practiced in Maryville.
Yep,
you know,
right.
And I think that was the kicker. We're going to practice, you know, in football, you're practicing 4 days a week and, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, and when we were 7 or 8, and then playing a game, one game a week. But we were playing all of our games on Saturdays in Knoxville.
At Evans Collins Stadium. I remember that.
That's exactly right. Yep. And I'll never forget, we were playing some games during the Tennessee game. So you could hear, you know, you could hear Neyland Stadium and, you know, you know, booming from where we were playing, but had a pretty good little team for a first year team. I mean, I wanted to say we played like 12 games or maybe more. I don't know.
Right.
But had a pretty good little team. Good. We had a good group, you know, good group of kids, good class.
So go ahead, Joseph. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to ask. So you remember what led you to playing quarterback? Because obviously you started at a young age and that kind of led you down the path that you would eventually go through. So what do you remember, like, how you chose that or how you ended up there?
Well, I couldn't do anything else.
Okay.
So, I mean, I was an okay runner, especially when I was young. I was an okay runner. I wasn't physical. I didn't like to tackle. But I liked to, you know, I liked to throw and catch and do that stuff. And so that, I mean, out of, you know, basically by default, I was a quarterback. You know, I was really good at turning around, handing it off.
Right.
And I was, you know, and I was, I guess I was, you know, smart enough to learn how to do everything, you know? Yeah. And so, and, you know, and I could take a snap and, you know, it's kind of funny, but at 7 and 8, if you can take a snap, then you got a chance to play quarterback.
That's right.
You can't take a snap. And so, so anyway, that's kind of how it got started. And I, you know, I wasn't the best runner or blocker. And so I wasn't going to play running back, you know, and at that, when you're at 7 and 8 year old league, your best players are going to carry the ball most of the
right.
time, you know,
right.
and your best players are going to play linebacker, you know?
Right.
And so,
right.
and so, and I wasn't even close to one of our best players. And so that's kind of, you know, at that age, your quarterbacks are just kids you can trust and,
right.
you know, can handle the, can call the play and get it to where you need to get the football, you know? And so for a long time, honestly, that's what I was good at. And I was okay with that. You know, we weren't throwing it very much at all, even on into peewees and midgets. But that's what I worked on because I knew that, you know, down the road, that's what I was going to have to be able to do if I wanted to continue to play quarterback. And, of course, that's where Coach Quarles came in because he kind of shaped my motion. And I wasn't the strongest by any means, but I had a quick release, so I was able to do it.
Well, you know, the funny thing that I remember so much about that first year was you know, obviously Dan Holloway only coached that 1 year, if I remember, and then your dad kind of took it over after that, after you and. But anyway, the thing that was so funny about that year that I remember was Dan, you know, wanted to run all these exotic plays, like from the Little Giants. You know, he wanted to run like the annexation of Puerto Rico. You know, and your dad just wanted to run the football and control the clock. And I'll never forget, you know, it was amazing. It was really funny. He wanted to try all this trick stuff. And your dad was like, let's just run the football. You know,
yeah,
I just thought that was hilarious. You know,
well, we were a power eye team right off tackle, you know, right. with the occasional jet sweep. And that's right. about it.
But every once in a while, Dan wanted to try to throw in some kind of flea flicker double pass type thing. And I remember your dad used to roll his eyes every time he kind of brought that.
Gosh, that is hilarious.
Times,
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we're talking about football now, but you played football, or excuse me, baseball and basketball too, right? Growing up,
I did. Yep, yeah. I played. Of course, I started out at Eagleton, and man, I was just so bad at baseball when I was younger. You know, what's funny is I was always. I mean, I was stereotypical right fielder. You know, batted eighth and ninth, and I was awful. I mean, we played some travel ball and I was always one of the worst kids on the team. And when I was about 12, my dad bought a batting cage in my backyard. And
I remember that. I think we actually hit there one time. I remember that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I kind of fell in love with hitting.
Yeah.
And he'd build a pitcher mound out there. And so, you know, during the summers, of course, my dad traveled a lot, but when he was not traveling, he was home, he worked from home. And so during the summers, you know, me and him would go back there and hit about every day, you know, and I would pitch and I didn't, like I said, I didn't have a great arm, but I could throw strikes and I kind of fell in love with baseball. And so I got a whole lot better, you know, when I was 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, playing a little travel ball here and there and then playing, you know, at Maryville Little League. And then of course I played basketball. That was my favorite sport when I was a kid, you know, up until I got, you know, all the way through high school. But that's when football kind of became more dominant for me, you know, and I knew that was my best sport. But I loved it all as a kid. I even ran a little track with the Knoxville Track Club, and then I did some swimming, did some karate. I mean, I did a little bit of everything, especially when I was like you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, those okay. years. I remember we were somewhere every night. Of course, I was the only, you know, I had an older sister who played basketball, but that was it. So, you know, we didn't have to work off really many other schedules but my own, you know, so I was definitely spoiled.
So what was it, though, that, I mean, you know, you mentioned about when you were 12 and 13, you got really good at baseball and you kind of fell in love with it a little bit. And I remember, you know, in middle school, if I remember correctly, of course, I'm getting old, so my memory's not that great. But I remember you really didn't play quarterback your eighth grade year in middle school. So it was kind of the next year when you got to the high school when you started to kind of move into the quarterback position. So what was the can you put your finger on one event or one time that said, hey, I want to focus on football? Or was it just something that kind of evolved?
It was definitely my freshman year. Okay. You know, as you said, in middle school, I played football. I was on the team, but I didn't play a whole lot. And, right. you know, a lot of that was, you know, a lot of the kids had passed me up physically. I was a late bloomer and, you know, really, really into my junior year in high school before I started maturing, you know, and going through puberty. I mean, I was a late bloomer. And so a lot of those kids in middle school were just bigger, faster, and stronger. I didn't need to be out there playing. I could still throw a little bit, but I was so right. limited, you know, and so I do remember, though, my freshman year, you know, I won that quarterback position on the football, on the freshman team.
Right.
You know, and that's when it kind of clicked for me that, you know, I have a chance because there wasn't a quarterback in the class ahead of us.
Right.
You know, I knew, and I was smart enough to do the math and figure out that I'd have a chance to play quarterback for 2 years at Maryville High School. And so that's kind of when I started putting, you know, most of my marbles in that basket, so to speak, right. and you know, try to be as good as I could be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so like going back to that time then, I guess after freshman year and going forth, and you mentioned this earlier, talk a little bit about your relationship then as a player with Coach Quarles and how he helped you along. I know you mentioned you know, kind of some of the throwing mechanics, but just that and just, you know, whether it's physically or grasping the offense and that initial relationship with him that helped you as a player.
Yeah, I was definitely from a football perspective, I was definitely, you know, born on second base, so to speak, just because I got to play for Coach Quarles, you right. know, and then of course got to coach with him before he went to Furman last year. But I was so blessed to get to train and learn under him because one, he was so good at keeping it simple. You know, for me, I didn't have a really strong arm, you know, especially in high school. And so I had to be on time, you know, quarterback timing is everything, you know,
right.
I almost had to be ahead of on time really for me. And my, you know, I remember the off season between my freshman and sophomore year, you know, he would, you know, during spring practice and stuff, he was working with my motion and trying to get it shorter and quicker. And, you know, it stuck. I finally got it to where it felt good. And I had a really quick release and, you know, and I threw every day that off season. I would get three or four guys, you know, receivers to come throw. And that carried on all the way through my senior year. And I really attribute Coach Quarles to kind of making me the player that I was. Of course I had so many good players around me in our class, you know, but, mm-hmm. But he was so good at making it simple and getting it to where, you know, you could instill confidence in a player. And so, you know, that helped me out through my career, obviously. And then getting to coach with him. I remember when I was done playing at Maryville College and, you know, he had told me there'd be a spot on staff for me if I was interested. And of course I was, you know, drooling over that opportunity for about the first year or two. You know, I knew what my role was, which wasn't very much. My goal was to be a sponge and kind of soak up everything that I could. And, you know, I kind of had a head start, though, because I played for him. And so I knew, you know, kind of our schemes already and kind of what we were trying to accomplish offensively. And then, you know, after about year two or three, I think, you know, I'll never forget Coach Quarles had come to me, I think after the first year, and just said, hey, you're going to, you know, I I think you're doing a great job, and I trust you. I trust you with a lot more of the offense, and it was a conversation we had coming off of spring practice, I think, going into my second year of coaching. And that right there, after that conversation, I was sold on coaching football. Like until then, it was fun. It was almost like a hobby. And then after that, he instilled confidence in me and kind of turned me into a believer that, you know, I might have a chance to do this, not just have fun doing it, but do it for a living, you know. And obviously, as each year went by, he let me do more and more. And, you know, I think after year three or four, he kind of turned me loose on the JV offense, and I was calling that. And then, you know, year five and six with him, you know, he let me do some of the practice scripts, and I was doing the practices and started signaling in all the plays on Friday nights on the varsity games and communicating with him. And, you know, before long, we were always kind of on the same page, and we were running things through each other. But obviously he had all the veto power, because that's what he was so good at, is, you know, play calling and calling things at the right time. So, like I said, I was born on second base as far as a coaching standpoint goes, because I got to learn from the best.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, because people look at coaches, you know, the average fan looks at a coach and judges them by wins and losses, because that's all they really see. Okay.
Right.
But, you know, it's kind of like an iceberg. I mean, fans see the tip of it, but so much more is underneath. Like you talked about Coach Quarles when you were playing, you know, figuring out what you did well and putting in place to accentuate that. And then as your coach, you know, building you along slowly. That's really important, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what a coach is all about? Finding the strengths and weaknesses of his players, or his coaches even, and playing to those strengths and trying to eliminate those weaknesses?
I don't think there's any question about it. And I think nobody does it better than the Patriots, you know, and Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. I think they're the best. I mean, you watch them 1 week and they're, you know, throwing it 50, 60 times. And then the very next week they may run it 30 times. And, you know, they're doing, you know, guys, they got healthy and whatever they can do to win. And obviously it helps having Tom Brady, but I think you're right, Ralph. I mean, you figure out what you're good at. And by that, I mean, what your kids are good at. And then kind of build around it. And that's what Coach Quarles was so good at. And one of the things that I also think that he did such a good job of that I took from him is he always stayed ahead of the curve schematically. I think, you know, we were split backs, you know, twins open for the most part when I was playing. But, you know, when I was coaching with him, we were always looking for the next thing that we can install and be good at. Obviously, that our kids can have success with. And so,
right.
You know, when he left, you know, that was my goal. I was like, all right, what needs to stay the same? Because Coach Quarles had, you know, built such a great foundation and the standard was so high. You don't want to change everything, but you got to change something, you know? And so, because it's just different leadership and things are going to change just because two different people are, you know, they're different. And I knew they would, but I didn't want them to change too much, just the right amount. And so that was the hardest part last offseason, was figuring out, all right, what are we going to do that's different? And what are we going to keep the same?
Right.
All right. Well, quickly, too, I want to go back to, you know, you're talking about your playing days a little bit here. So, you know, obviously, you know, you talked about being mentored under Coach Quarles in high school, and, you know, you obviously had a lot of success in high school, not only you personally, but, you know, the Maryville program while you were there. But then, if I remember correctly, you went to Tennessee, right? And at that time, upon graduating high school, at that time you were kind of done with football. Is that right?
Yeah. Coach Quarles had put together like a little highlight film for me, and I had a little interest. I could have played, you know, at some NAIA schools in D3. And I just thought I was burnt out. I'd been playing since I was 7 years old, we talked about, and a bunch of my friends were going to Tennessee. And so I just thought I was done playing and burnt out. And so, yeah, so I went to Tennessee and I was miserable, to be quite honest. You know, Tennessee, it's a great school, and it's definitely a perfect fit for a lot of folks, but for me, it was not. And I really, really missed being a part of a team. And I realized that really a month in to my first year of college. And by, you know, November of that first semester, I mean, there's probably a month left in school, I had already decided that I was going to transfer back to Maryville College and, you know, and hopes to play.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I communicated with, reached out to Coach Iruli, and I think he was, you know, very welcoming of me. Maryville College had, that had been a place I'd visited and kind of looked at before I chose not to play. And so, so it was a good fit for me. Honestly, it was the best decision, that I could have made for myself as far as college goes, because I just loved it. It was a perfect fit. Met my wife there and then got to play football. And you know, that was just perfect. It was just all the way around. I couldn't have made a better decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on the same token though, talk about the transition, you know, to playing in Maryville College, because coming from Maryville High School where, well, I mean, you lost maybe one or two games in 4 years almost. So,
yeah,
you know, on the flip side, coming to Maryville College, I guess more of a regular program, as you would say. They may go 6-4, 7-3, and kind of just the transition of taking a new offense, you know, learning from a new coaching staff, and you know, kind of being in some battles each week as opposed to high school.
Yeah, it was definitely different.
Yeah.
You know, but I at that time I was starting to gain more weight, and I'd grown, hit another spurt, and so. And I was really confident that I could go in and play, yeah. You know, and that was my goal. I did not want to go and you know, have to wait to play. And I knew that they had a quarterback that was leaving them and they were graduating one. And so I knew I'd have a chance to start. And I was behind the eight ball a little bit going into fall camp. I didn't do spring practice with them. But I did get to do the throwing in the summer. And after, you know, going to those throwing sessions, of course, once I decided I was playing, you know, back in, you know, November, December, I was going to the weight room every morning. I was going up to Olympia, you know, every morning while they were doing 6 a.m. I made sure that I got up at, you know, 5:30, 6 a.m. and was going through not the workout with them, but the same workout just at a different place. And I didn't want to get behind. I wanted to have a chance to play. And that's, you know, that's kind of the way it worked out. I'll never forget. My goal in fall camp was to not have one bust, and I think I surprised the coaches because, you know, that honestly, that was a strength of mine, was, you know, knowing what I was supposed to do and where the ball was supposed to go and where everybody's supposed to be lined up. And so I think they thought that I would struggle with that. That's probably what would hold me back. And so my goal was to really not have any busts and to prove to them that I could, you know, stomach the, you know, the playbook and kind of what we were doing. And, you know, it really was a lot different than at Maryville, just because, you know, you got guys coming from different areas and backgrounds of football, but I learned it well. That was a strength of mine. And so I played off that and what a great experience I had, you know. And it was tough. Like you said, you know, Joseph, you know, I think the first game we lost.
Right.
First game as a starter.
Right.
We put up like 600 yards offense and lost 38-42 at Huntington, and that's probably the best football game I ever played in my entire life. My first college football game, and we lost. And so I remember getting on the bus thinking, man, this is weird. I'm not, you know,
yeah.
I'm not used to. It was really bittersweet for me because I had so much fun and had played well. Our offense played well. But we just couldn't get it done, and so that was definitely a weird feeling.
Let me kind of ask you about that in a way, and kind of take a different approach. And you tell me if I'm all wet or not. But you know, I've been associated with the Maryville Heights program now for probably a long time, 20 years,
sure,
or so, from either watching it or having my kids play. But you know, you don't see a lot of Maryville High School players either going to play in college or having a lot of success in college for 4 years. In other words, a lot of them go, they start, and they quit playing. You know, there obviously there's been a few. My point is, how much do you think the success at Maryville is almost a negative when it comes to guys going to college? Because a lot of guys go to college and they think, hey, college is going to be just like Maryville High School, but it's not. All right. So is, you think there's something to that, or you think it's just kind of, you know, the nature of the way things work out?
You know, maybe a little bit, Ralph. There may be some to that. But also I just think that to play college football, it's so tough, you know,
right. Yeah.
For anybody. So I think if we looked at every school, I think you'd see, you know, okay, there's 6 guys going to play college football. Only 2 made it all the way. You know, I think we really would see those numbers drop off just because, I mean, we know what it takes to play college football, and
right.
for every team, there's going to be, you know, guys dropping out. I think, you know, Maryville College every year, they're bringing in a class of 50, but only graduating maybe, you know, they're lucky to get to 20, you know?
Right.
So I think, you know, every year you're going to have kids fall off. And so I, you know, there may be the number may be a little bit higher at Maryville. But again, I think that's the case. My guess is that it would be the case at all high schools.
Okay.
But I think Maryville probably has, you know, we've won a lot of games with
right.
really solid high school football players.
Right.
Not necessarily, you know, the Division I talents that some other schools might put out.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So, you know, that's an interesting thought, and I hadn't thought a lot about it, but it'd be interesting to know the kind of those statistics for sure.
Yeah. So, as a coach now, what is your role, or what has your role been in terms of, you know, counseling players that are looking to play at the next level? Just in terms of either helping them with recruiting exposure, or just giving them your insights on, or talking with them about their mindset going into college. What's been your role, you know, in terms of kind of helping kids play at the next level?
Yeah, and Joseph, that's a great question. I've really learned a whole lot about that in the last 12 months
right.
because obviously I never did it before.
Sure.
You know, but just on the side, but I've really enjoyed the recruiting, like coaches coming in and recruiting our kids. And I've enjoyed that, you know, trying to sell our kids, you know, and show you why ours are better than theirs, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, but at the end of the day, the film doesn't lie. So,
yeah, right.
you know, if there's a kid who can play for that team, then it's going to be obvious. And if they can't, then it's going to be obvious. So,
right.
you know, the film doesn't lie, but what I've really enjoyed is giving those kids, you know, some encouragement throughout the year, because a lot of times it comes down to their grades, you know? And so we've started really early, especially with our sophomore kids, you know, the ones that look like, you know, they're going to project to, you know, maybe have a chance to play in college or want to play in college. You know, we're starting in early on them, making sure they're not digging themselves out of the hole their senior year just to be eligible, or, you know, or
right.
just because a lot of times if a kid, you know, teams may take a kid who's not as good as another one if their GPA is a whole point better, or they got a test score that's, you know, just because they know that kid's going to be there, you know,
right.
probably for the long haul. And so, you know, that I have really enjoyed keeping up with our kids and encouraging them to, you know, be really strong in the classroom, you know, and that's the two things. You know, you take care of the classroom, and you have a good film, then you're going to have a chance to play, you know, and no matter what position you play. I know some guys are worried, you know, they're you know, too small to play defensive line. They need to play linebacker. They're, you know, they're not getting enough touches at receiver. They need to play running back because they want to play college football. And my message to those guys are, listen, if you're an all-state player at your position, you're going to play college football. You know,
right.
you'll have a chance anyway, you know,
so right.
be the best football player on the field. It'll take care of itself.
Okay, so now I gotta ask this question, and just to kind of get your opinion on it. So okay, so Coach Quarles decides he's going to leave for Furman, and obviously they go through a coaching search, and you obviously wanted to be the head coach at Maryville because you put your name into it. You're named the head football coach at Maryville. All right. The next morning you wake up, what's the first thought in your mind?
Oh man, it was a flood of thoughts. I did not sleep really well for about a month after, because I had so many thoughts and so many ideas, and then, you know, kind of like you're alluding to, it was almost
what
almost
if I got
a
myself
dream. Yeah, yeah. Just oh my goodness, and I that was the first time that I truly, truly felt stress.
Right.
You know, and I thought I had, you know, maybe been stressed before, but that was when I'd really felt it, because, you know, I wanted to do a good job. That's the, you know, bottom line. That Maryville football has meant so much to me, and it obviously played a huge role in my life, and my coaches were my role models growing up, you know, all the way from when I was 7 and 8 to through high school and college. And so my coaches were my role models, and I wanted to be that role model for our kids, you know, and I wanted to maintain the level of excellence that Coach Quarles, you know, he had set the bar so stinking high. I mean, just
right.
250-16 in 17 seasons. I mean, that's just stupid. I mean, that's just, I don't think Bill Belichick could come to Maryville High School and go 215-16 or 250-16 in 17 years. Maybe he could, but I don't think it'll ever happen again. And so, you know, I definitely was humbled too, because like I said, the program, the type of program Maryville is, I honestly think it's the best program in the state of Tennessee, with the tradition and also with the level of excellence and just the school, you know, in general. It's just an awesome place, awesome community. And so I was floored. I almost, you know, I was 27 when I took the job. I turned 28 a month later.
Right.
And I could not believe that I had accepted it, and two, that they had given it to me. You know, at 27, I was a kid, and, you know, in a lot of ways still am, but the good thing about it is I had great help. You know, yeah. I had nobody on staff was leaving. And, you know, that whole process, Ralph, was crazy. You know,
right.
Because when Coach Quarles left, you know, the next couple of days, our director of school is Mike Winstead and our principal, Greg Roach. And we didn't have an athletic director because that was Coach Quarles. And so, So those two, they wanted to meet with everybody on staff and just to kind of get their thoughts, not even do interviews or anything like that, just to say, you know, what direction should we go? And so I remember I was about to go to Ohio. It was Christmas break. I was going to go head up to Ohio with my wife for Christmas. And so I was the first one to meet with them. And I remember I told them, I said, guys, first of all, it needs to be in staff or there's in-house. There's too many good coaches on this staff for us to go outside.
Right.
And you don't want to change too much. You don't want to change the whole culture. So anyway, you know, and I told them, guys, this is, you know, there's so many good candidates. There's so many ex-head coaches on our staff. I think there's four or five. I said, so no reason to go outside hire, you know, and, you know, I would be happy to serve any of these coaches that you'd name head coach. I'd be happy to serve them and help them in any role that I could do it. You know, I said at the same time, though, this is exciting for me because this is kind of a dream job for me, dream come true, you know, to get to, you know, I don't know if I'm quite sure I want to replace Coach Quarles, but I didn't have a choice at that time. So, so by the time they had met with all the coaches, they called me back and said, hey, you know, we'd like for you to come in on Wednesday and kind of do an official interview. And this was 2 days later. So I drove back home to Maryville and went in there. And I mean, I basically sat down and 10 minutes later they'd said, well, we're going to name you the head coach after meeting with all the other guys. And so that was really humbling for me. That, you know, I kind of felt like all the other guys on staff had already interviewed for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me a boost of confidence, so to speak, that, okay, nobody's leaving, you know, and they believe in me. And obviously with their help, we think we can get it done. And so after that, I was floored because I was the youngest on staff and still am, but I had a group of guys that were my role models. A lot of them I played for that believed, you know, that I could do a good job, you know? And so that was really humbling. And that's still, I get chills thinking about that.
Well, let me follow up on that with one thing. And you know, obviously you were under, you may not have thought of it at the time, but there was a tremendous amount of pressure because really you were almost in a no-win situation. Because, and I know you probably thought about this part, you know, if you lose one game or two games, the average person is going to say, oh, well, you know, I mean, it's not as good as Coach Quarles. If you don't win the state championship, well, here we go again. I know you probably thought about that part, but then the flip side, which I thought about was, and I don't know, I want to get your idea if this crossed your mind, was, you know, you went in as head coach now with a bunch of players that remembered Coach Quarles as their head coach. Okay.
Yeah.
So obviously if you make one decision that doesn't work out or something doesn't go right, you know, well, you know, Coach Quarles would have done it a different way. So there was a lot of pressure there. I mean, did any of that cross your mind? And if so, how were you able to deal with all that?
Well, it crossed my mind a whole lot, way too much, honestly. just too much. And I felt the pressure. There's no question about that, you know, throughout the year. And it got better once the season started because we were so busy. You know, you're just making practice plans and, you know, watching tape, trying to figure out a way to win. But I'm telling you, I felt that was the longest off season just because all, yeah, like you said, Ralph, all I could think about was, well, you know, if we get to, you know, we can go undefeated regular season, lose third round of playoffs, and it's a failure. You know, you're right. 12-1, and you know, it's you failed, you know? And so I definitely thought about that some, but I was my best when I got to the point where, you know, it didn't matter to me, so to speak, what the average fan, like you said, would think, because you're so right. That's what exactly would have happened and probably did happen when we went down there and lost to Oakland was, well, this is not the same Maryville team that, you know, that we've seen in the past. And even though we didn't have a lot of our players in that game, but the part you said about the kids, that was my biggest fear, was the kids not taken to the transition. Fortunately, I had one of my strengths, I think, probably my greatest strength is building relationships. And I had really invested in a lot of those kids. You know, we went on a mission trip the last two summers to Costa Rica. And, I got to take, you know, 15 or 20 of those football players, down there and do some sports camps and really we were doing PE games and, you know, in the camps, and then we'd have our guys, you know, give their testimony and do some devotions with the kids. But just being in those camps, a lot of those kids that went down there was this past senior class. And so I had really built a strong bond with this class, and they were the leaders of the team. So this season really could have gone a lot of different ways, but it went the way it went because those guys were willing to back me as their head coach.
Right.
And I was very, very fortunate that, you know, that they did that, because they could have easily said, you know, like you had said, Ralph, this is not the coach we've been playing for the last 3 years. And so, you know, we go down and lose to Oakland, and who knows what the next week's going to look like, because we got to turn around, and after we played McMahon, we got to play Alcoa and Fulton.
Right.
You know, and so we played some close games. There's no question the Catholic game could have gone either way. The Alcoa game could have gone either way, but so could the Oakland game that we lost. I think the best thing that could have happened to me was playing that tough of a schedule.
Right.
The first five games, you know, and unfortunately we're going to do it again this year, you know, but especially after, you know, and I don't want to jump ahead, but as much as we're losing, it's going to be a challenge.
Sure.
You know, it's going to be quite a challenge, but I was fortunate to have this senior class and be real close to them. And they kind of got behind me and, you know, my whole thing was I kept telling them I love them, you know, and no matter what happens on the field, I love them and was going to be there for them, and they were there for me.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely. I want to ask you about a different aspect of the program there. I mean, with me being a strength conditioning coach and kind of being that's what I'm into. I remember, you know, my days there, you know, working out in the morning with Coach Thompson, you know, who was there at the time, and I guess looking back now, I guess 14, 15 years ago, some of the stuff we did may not be as advanced as what goes on today. So talk a little bit about Coach Waters and your guys' program with the kids, the strength conditioning, you know, away from the practice field, and you know, how much that means to your program and programs in general as a head coach.
It's huge. I really think it is the lifeblood of our program, you know, what we do in the weight room, because not only are we getting bigger and faster and stronger, but we're building a lot of team camaraderie in there too.
Right.
And so Coach Waters does an unbelievable job. He is, you know, he played at Maryville. That's kind of special. Played for Maryville and then went to Tennessee Tech and played 4 years and started at center. And then he GA'd at Tennessee and for the, you know, the strength coach there, when Coach Fulmer was at Tennessee. And then he coached at Heritage for a few years before he came back to Maryville and kind of took over as an assistant with Coach Ellis on the offensive line. But then he took over for Coach Thompson in the weight room. And you know, Coach Thompson had done it for such a long time and had done a great job. But Coach Waters, being younger, obviously had a lot of new and fresh ideas. And he made such a huge difference for our team, getting, you know, our average looking kids, you know, squatting and power cleaning and making them more explosive and, you know, kind of raising the bar, so to speak. And a lot of teams that we played had done that, and we were a little bit behind for a year or two, especially the, you know, the really good teams that we play and on into the playoffs. But man, we are so fortunate to have Coach Waters. I really do think he's the best strength coach in this state. And that's at any level. That's at all levels of football. Because he's got a lot of energy. I think, you know, that's kind of a must for strength coaches today. But he's very detailed. And what I love about him is he coaches every kid. You know, he's not just watching our starters all the time and letting everybody else work out. You know, he's teaching our, you know, our kickers how to do power cleans and, you know, the guys that, and I'll never forget the – I love this Ralph Miranda quote, that those guys go out there and battle for four quarters and it comes down to a darn kicker who's going to win. I'll never forget you saying that, but it's so true. But Coach Waters, you know, he coaches every kid, and he's so detail-oriented, and those guys, nobody slips through the cracks. And I think that's huge for us because, you know, our mentality this past year was, you know, it's kind of an all-hands-on-deck idea. You know, everybody matters. There's 88 starting positions if you include all the special teams, so all of you can have a chance to make a difference, and not if not through practice, especially out there on Friday nights. And he does a good job of instilling that mentality into them.
Well, you know, that quote of mine actually came true this year, because I sat there and watched you guys play Oakland in the semifinals, and it was a battle. I mean, you guys beat each other up and down that football field, and then with 20-some seconds left, what did it come down to? Your kicker, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, if he makes the kick, which he did, he's the hero, and everybody goes, if he misses the kick, then, you know, it all came down to that, right? So
that's
a truism, actually.
It's so true, and it's crazy. That was a fun game too.
Oh yeah, that was an excellent football game. Well, I want to ask you a question real quick, if you don't mind. I want to maybe change the subject. Not really change it, but you had mentioned earlier about playing as a 7-year old and playing as an 8-year old, and I know, you know, you had some battles with, you know, some concussion issues when you were in college. I mean, that's not a secret of any sort. So I guess what I want to ask is, you know, it seems like today there's a general push to try to, I mean, I've even heard that they're trying to do away with football for any kids under the age of 14. Okay. I think that's a mistake. You know, what's your take on all that? I mean, what's your take on football for younger kids? And, you know, I mean, I just want to get your opinion on all that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, you know, it's obviously a touchy subject for a lot of people. But to me, there's no other game like the game of football.
I agree.
And from a team aspect, and from a, you know, a physicality aspect of it, there's the combinations of all the things that kids can learn through the game of football is unbelievable. And there's some great sports, obviously, where you can learn teamwork and work ethic and all that stuff. But to me, that the three best things about football are, one, you're learning how to be a great teammate, because that's going, one day you're going to be a husband, and you're going to have kids, and you're going to have to be a great teammate. You're going to have to be a servant, you know, and you're going to work for somebody that you know, you may not always agree with, and you're going to play with people in football that you don't always like, and you got to learn to get along with. So it teaches you how to be a great teammate. That's huge. It teaches you how to be accountable, you know, how to show up on time and be where you're supposed to be, you know, and on any given play, you know, on the kickoff team, being in your, so it teaches you how to be accountable. And you know, those things, I just feel like football is the best teacher of so many life skills. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a mistake to take it away from our kids. I also think that you don't see concussions, at least from my point of view, when I was going through football. I mean, we didn't see any concussions at all going through 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, all the way up through. There's so many less injuries in football at a younger age.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I can remember my dad saying, you know, he coached for the Little Rebs for 14 years, and he had two or three really bad injuries.
Right.
And they were broken arms and broken legs of kids playing around before practice. You know, it's they're one of the kids was running and stepped on the football and fell backwards and broke his arm, you know, and so
right.
So he had three bad injuries and two of them were before practice, you know,
right.
Over a 14-year span. And so I just think with today, I honestly think you're more likely to get a concussion as a 7 year, 8 year old playing soccer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because my wife played soccer all the way up, played at Maryville College. And so we've talked a lot about this.
Sure.
You know, and her brother played soccer all the way through college too. And he had three or four concussions because, you know, you use your head so much in soccer, you know,
right.
And, you know, with headers and, you know, obviously when you get to that age, you know, they're kicking it pretty dang hard, you know?
Right.
And so you're heading it and everything, and you're hitting it against your head in practice. You do drills and stuff. And so I'm not so sure that, you know, that soccer or a game like that isn't any safer than football. You know, our game with the way the rules are being changed, it's getting safer every year. The peel back block, you know, you can't, it's illegal now, you know?
Right.
And so we're coaching our kids not to do that, you know, whereas that was, you know, that's what got everybody out of their seat a decade ago.
Right.
You know, and now it's illegal, and I'm okay with that. Like I do think it was part of football, but now it's obviously not. And I'm okay with that. Cause at the end of the day, I still, you know, football to me is about blocking and tackling.
Correct.
You know, you do those two things better than the other team, you're going to have a great chance of winning. It's not necessarily about the D cleaters on a receiver who's not paying attention or not looking and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't have any problem with the rule changes. And then of course our equipment's getting better and better.
Right.
And so there's no question that our game is under attack. And a lot of it has to do with the NFL CTE studies.
Right.
But I've done a whole lot of research on those myself, just because obviously it affects me as a coach, and then personally, dealing with some concussions in college, you know, and I do think that a lot of those, I did find out that a lot of the research that group had done was extremely biased, you know, and they're given like 90% of the players that they had chosen, you know, had CTE, but also what they didn't tell you was a lot of those players were the ones that had, you know, drug abuse problems and, you know, had trouble with painkillers and, you know, had so much other stuff going on in their life that could also cause CTE in the brain, you know?
Sure.
So anyway, it was not a really a fair study that I had seen that I had done. And I'll never forget. I read this article and I shared it with a lot of our middle school parents. One time they asked me to speak at their banquet. I'd shared this article of a neurosurgeon in Boston. You may have seen this. It was a pretty popular article, had come out, and he had come to the conclusion that he was never going to let his 9-year-old kid play football.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of went in on his own. He had his own practice and he kind of started studying it because his kid was a huge Patriots fan and loved Gronkowski and wanted to play football. And, you know, long story short, he came to the conclusion that he can't afford to not let his kid play football. After, you know, seeing what that study, you know, kind of how biased it was and unfair it was. And then, you know, doing the study himself and kind of coming to the conclusion that there's just not enough evidence that says football players are going to have CTE or that, you know, your kid's going to get a concussion. The percentages are so, so low, but it's the only thing you read online or the only thing you see in the news, you know?
Right.
It's just the negative, you know, the negative media, like everything we see nowadays. So anyway, I agree with you, Ralph. I think it's a mistake if we take that away from our kids and, you know, football can teach us so much. And I mentioned, you know, how teaches how to be a great teammate, teaches how to be accountable. But lastly, I think one of my favorite things is it teaches us how to handle adversity.
Right.
And when you can teach your kids those three things, I think they're way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, absolutely.
No question.
Absolutely. It's the last question here before we start to wrap it up a little bit. But and just recently in your last answer, you mentioned, you know, your dad coaching the Little Rebs program for so long. Talk about your relationship with him in terms of coaching, because you know, with the position you're in now, not all coaches have a dad that's coached for almost two decades now. You know, albeit not the same age group, but talk about just kind of, you know, your relationship with him in terms of, you know, do you guys still talk coaching, and, you know, what advice has he given you, not only in your assistant coaching days, but now that you're a head coach?
Yeah, we don't talk a whole lot of football anymore.
Okay.
But he was such a role model for me from a coaching aspect, because, you know, I would get done with my middle school practice or with my high school practice and always go by his practice before I went home, you know? And so that was just kind of ingrained in me that, you know, you were going to be at practice and seeing him coach and, you know, seeing the way he, you know, handled kids, and he had a heart for him for sure, you know? And when he gave it up a couple of years ago, it hurt me, you know, cause that's what I knew was my dad was, you know, going to be at practice and driving his Dodge. That's the only time he drove that truck, you know, was to football practice. And so when he gave it up, I bought that truck from him. I'm taking that truck cause I just loved it, you know? And so, but he was such a role model in the coaching aspect for me. Not so much from like an X's and O's standpoint. We never really, you know, had a chalk talk or anything like that, but just, you know, how to be a coach. And I think that quietly it was instilled in me the kind of that I might be a coach one day from him. And I just really enjoyed being around him on the practice field, and I loved practice, you know, all the way from when I was a kid, when I was 7 and 8 playing for him and for you, Ralph, and all the way through Joey and Don through the middle school, high school, college. I loved practicing, and I still do today. Like I love Friday nights. Don't get me wrong. They're great. And that's what we do it for. But I really do love your typical Tuesday practice. I love going to practice and trying to get better and trying to figure out a way to beat the guys we're about to play.
Man, we're talking about practice, not a game.
That's exactly right.
Oh boy, well, it's been a lot of fun, Derek. And the way we like to wrap up our segments is we do what we call a rapid fire segment. And what we do is we'll throw out some questions, and you just give us the first, not necessarily the first thing that comes to your mind, but the quick answer of what comes to your mind. And then Joseph will wrap it up with, he usually likes to do like a top five list. So we'll.
Gotcha. Am I a one word or is it?
No, it doesn't have to be one. Okay. It doesn't have to be one word at all. Okay. Gotcha. All right. So the first question is, when you were growing up, what athlete or celebrity's poster did you have up in your room?
Michael Jordan. Yeah, that's an easy one.
Okay.
Michael Jordan.
All right. All right. Best movie you've seen this year or in the past, the past year or so.
Honestly, I've probably seen two movies in the past year. I know that sounds terrible.
Right. That makes sense.
Golly. I can't even think of one, guys. I have no idea.
That's fine. Just give me your favorite movie of all time. First one comes
Remember
to
the Titans. That's my favorite movie of all time. Yeah.
If you could make a cameo role, if you could get a cameo role in any TV series, which one would it be?
So... So I'm a huge fan of The Office. It's no longer on TV anymore, but that was my favorite show for a long time. So I think it'd be pretty cool to stand next to Michael Scott, Dwight Schrute.
All right. Fair enough.
Peyton Manning or Tom Brady?
Gotta go with Brady.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Love Manning, but I gotta go with Brady.
Okay. If you could have lunch with one person across history, who would it be?
So I've read a lot of Abraham Lincoln biographies, and I'm just kind of mesmerized by his, it's almost like a character. I almost forget that he was real, you know, cause all the stories. So that would be my, I'd love to have lunch with Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Okay.
If you could speak one other language fluently besides English, what one would you pick?
Spanish. I mean, I can speak it a little bit, you know, and I've been to Costa Rica a couple times and took a lot of classes, but I'm not fluent, and I learned I wasn't fluent when I went to Costa Rica.
Right.
And so that's the one I'd use the most.
Okay. All right. Would you, as an offensive coach, all right, and I know you're the head coach, but you probably spend a lot of time on offense. Would you rather have first and 10 or third and one?
I like third and one.
Okay.
I'd take third and one. Because here's why. Because I know I've got two downs to get 1 yard. And so if we can't get 1 yard and two downs, then we don't need to be out there.
All right. Fair enough.
Do you currently have any pregame superstitions now?
Coach Russell and I, we get off by ourselves and pray, and we've done that since I was an assistant on staff. We started that, and it continued, and so that's pretty much the only kind of ritual that I have is kind of a pregame prayer, and that's pretty much it. Not really superstitious.
All right, so I guess we're ready for our top five.
So like you said, we'll wrap up with the top five with all our guests here. So today I want to go with, now you mentioned you were originally from North Carolina.
That's right.
And I remember, if I remember correctly, growing up, you're always a North Carolina Tar Heel fan somewhat. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Yep. All right. So we're going to finish with your top five North Carolina Tar Heels of all time.
I love that. Just the players, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So let's see here.
Number five. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Michael Jordan's obviously on that list. Obviously. He's not my favorite Carolina player of all time, though, because I didn't get to watch him play. I don't even know if he'd be on the list. You know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give MJ the token number five.
Okay.
All right.
Just because he should
just
be
because.
On there, you know?
Right. Just goat, because. Right?
I got you.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the GOAT. So,
right.
Let's go Michael Jordan number five. I loved Antoine Jameson.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I was a kid growing up, he played in the league for a while. Let's throw him at four. Number three would probably be, probably Sean May. He was a big center, won a national title for him in 12. Yeah, he's probably number three. My number two would be Tyler Hansborough, who played there. He's still in the league right now, but he was gritty. I know he gave me hope.
He was
not as athletic as nearly anybody he played, but he could, you know, make a lot of plays. And so I loved watching him play. But my favorite North Carolina player of all time is Vince Carter.
Okay. And I was waiting for, he's I was a 40, waiting for him. Yeah.
42-year-old still playing in the NBA and obviously a Tar Heel, but his claim to fame is in the Olympics when he dunked over a 7-footer. I mean, literally the guy went through his leg, so you'll have to look that one up on YouTube because it's probably the greatest dunk I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll definitely do that. Well, Derek, we certainly appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I know it's hard with two little ones, and we appreciate it. We proud of the success that you've achieved. We wish you nothing but continued success at Maryville High School and in all your future endeavors. And thanks for spending time with us.
Guys, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it and can't wait to listen to more of what you guys put out there. This is awesome.
All right, man. All right, Derek. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
All right. Thanks to Derek Hunt for joining us today on the Press Box Podcast episode. We hope all you guys out there enjoyed it. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes and follow us on Twitter, like we said in the intro, at Press Box Pod. And also subscribe to us in iTunes. To get all the latest episodes as soon as they are put up. So we will be back in the next few days with a new episode. And until then, for Ralph, this is Joseph signing off on the Press Box Podcast.